Hello, you're listening to Crossing the Desert. This podcast is a reality series about how I build my small business in the Emirates. I'm Isaac. In each episode, I share how my own business is going, but most importantly, I learn from other entrepreneurs who came to Dubai from India, Egypt, Palestine, Caribbean Islands, UK, Russia, and who knows where else. Stories of their success and challenges will help me on my own way. The podcast is brought to you by Fortis, the omnichannel platform that integrates POS, CRM, orders, payments, and loyalty programs for small and medium-sized businesses. In this episode, an entrepreneur builds three businesses one by one to find himself.
I changed so much in a degree where people who know me only at that time and see me today would not recognize me, would not recognize this person.
مرحبا شاركس اسمي ابراهيم ابو دياك رائد اعمال من الاردن مقيم في بلدي الثاني الامارات منذ عام 2010 انا المؤسس والكرييتيف دايركتور لجوكس اسايد جوكس اسايد هي فاشن براند متخصصه بالستريت وير.
You will hear the story of Ibrahim Abu Dyak, the founder and creative director of Jokes Aside and co-founder and creative director of Smashroom. He studied mechanical engineering, like typical Jordanian. Right after university, he went to work to Abu Dhabi in an automotive field. It was a quiet life, just like his parents expected him to live. Until one day there came a disaster.
One day I walked in the office and mind you, I was like doing amazing with that job. I was like getting promoted consistently every year. I was the youngest country manager sales and marketing for that international corporation that is a headquarter office in Dubai. Suddenly, I was walking the office one day. I said hi to my boss. He called me in and he's like, Ibrahim, you're fired. Take your stuff. Leave the office. Kid you not, this way. Leave the office and the HR will call you to sort out everything else. It hit me really hard at that moment because a lot of things. First of all, that taboo of being fired, because for me, I've always, my family instilled in me that Ibrahim is an overachiever. He's just like always, you know, doesn't fail, a role model for my siblings. And in a way or another, that took away a lot of my own childhood. My immediate reaction to that, getting fired and losing my job, I walked to a lake. There was a nearby lake by the office. I walked somewhere where nobody can see me and I start crying. I was thinking about how would my family would think about me, how would my wife at that time would think about me, how I would be able to afford the lifestyle, how I would be able to pay the credit cards, how I'd be able even to stay in Dubai because, you know, you gotta be sponsored. You need to have a visa and your visa usually comes with the job. Now, that was not really the peak because in a month or two from being fired, I went through divorce. So my 5 years marriage, 5 years job ended both at the same time. At that time, I remember my mom thinking that I had a black magic or something. Like somebody did some sort of spell on me. She flew in to try to help. She flew in from Jordan to see if she can help. But like, I'm like, mom, just, you know, I appreciate the support. I appreciate the love. But let me navigate through this myself because I believe it's nothing that you could do about today.
Yes, I'm afraid this is a point where parents couldn't help and such problems have to be solved by relying on yourself. And as if often the case with enterprising people, the fiasco in the corporate world was a reason for Ibrahim to think about his own business.
A few weeks later on, and I'm still trying to figure out what am I doing, I receive a job offer from a better company with a higher salary etc. and I had to say no. Because I needed to burn all these bridges behind me and to take control and basically change the narrative, at least for me as a person. I made a decision to be an entrepreneur.
So all this drama was just a story started. At this time, Ibrahim was reading tons of literature to develop his mindset and knowledge. Robert Kiyosaki, Tony Robbins. And to change one office for another was already too small for him.
the place where I started with entrepreneurship was a very familiar place. So a lot of people would say, okay, you start with something you know. And the most things I knew about at that time is cars. I love cars. I still love cars. So my first startup was about the used car industry and sort of like the lack of trust in the consumer market between the used car dealers and consumers. I went in business with two of my friends who worked at the same company that I worked with. Lovely people. However, we were a very, very bad match. We were, in terms of skill sets, and even to a degree mindset, because I was still developing mine, almost a copy of each other. And that is the worst thing you want to have in your business partner. Actually, you want to be as different as possible. It's complementary. You want to have similar mindsets in terms of like, you know, how do you look at money? How do you look at business? How do you generate revenue, etc.? However, in terms of skill sets, you have to be totally different.
To resolve his partnership problems, Ibrahim hired a coach from Australia and started meeting with him on video calls.
A lot of things that I've learned through that experience, if you're going into a business with someone, it's just like marriage. So you need to look at the skill sets, the mindset. I feel like there should be some sort of chemistry. So I'm not against starting a business with your friends, actually on the opposite.
If you don't mind me spoilering, Ibrahim now runs business with his best friend. But what his coach taught him, despite all the chemistry in business, you have to have things written down.
Being a Middle Eastern Arab thing is like, okay, we say it's barakah. Yeah, you just do it and you don't write it down. Okay, you just shake hands and that's it. Bullshit. No, and it's not about trust. Yes, I trust you, but we have to write it down, bro. You know, it's how it's done. It's how it should be. Being, a naive entrepreneur at the start, I fell into that trap of shaking hands, you know, going out, having a drink or coffee or food, whatever it is, talk about anything else. Last 5 minutes, you talk about business, you shake hands, that's it, you have a deal, and that's it. But there is no other sort of like, co-founder agreements, shareholder agreement, all these kind of things.
So Ibrahim had to exit his first business without earned capital, but having gained experience. And after this defeat, he only further straightened his desire to become an entrepreneur.
My mom would always say, Ibrahim, you are an engineer. What the hell are you doing? It always never fails to remind me that I am an engineer and I have to do something about that degree and in that field. It's a different kind of failure, if I want to say, but it wasn't, after all, a failure at all. It was already preparing me again for what is next. And what is next, if I haven't gone through that first experience, I wouldn't have gone to the next one. And what happened with the next one is that it just came organically.
While still working his corporate job, he was doing self-development. He was reading books, listening to podcasts, signing up for workshops.
One of them had the biggest impact on the changes that I was going through after, which is Unleash the Power Within by Tony Robbins. So I started reading about Tony and his work and watching videos. And then there was one program in London. You know, during this program, you actually walk on fire. So I'm a fire walker. And with that, basically what you learn is the power of your mind and how much our minds are so powerful. 6 days immersive experience, came back with a fresh mindset, a really nice sort of support group.
This network brought Ibrahim the idea for the next business.
When I came back, there was a small group of people from Dubai who went to Tony's program in London. And they were doing some sort of like bi-weekly meetups, some sort of like to keep the momentum, to support each other. And I went to these meetings, and that is where I met my, at that time, a future co-founder, Hiba, we both decided to start the Smashroom, I met Hiba. I was talking about my divorce and how I got fired and how I want to become an entrepreneur. I'm starting this car business. It's not really working well, but I don't want to give up. I know I have something in here. And she shared the story of herself when she lost her grandmother. And she was very, very close to her grandma. Hiba studied psychology. She had to suddenly to deal with a lot of grief. That grief was eating her from inside. She tried doing a lot of things such as yoga, kickboxing, and talking to a psychologist, a lot of things, and still did not really help well. So she had an idea of taking an old printer and a baseball bat to the backyard. She smashed them into pieces. And that's when that aha moment came.
I can totally relate to this. I mean, I hate and I'm impatient when it comes to waiting. For example, even recently, I had to go to work trip. So my flight was at, I think, around like 1 a.m. So I saw the text email that my flight was delayed. So it was 1 hour delay. So I went to the airport 1 hour later. But then it turned out it was delayed for 6 more hours. And for me, I hate this stuff. If it would be more transparent, I would know that, for example, those 6 hours, I could go to, I don't know, lounge room or some airport hotel and just sleep like 4 or 5 hours to keep my mental health state. But I couldn't sleep in the sitting position in the airport, and I was growing impatient, and oh god, that would smash room would help me a lot. People need, you know, we need that space where we can express our angerness, and Hiba realized that this is something you can make business of.
She took the idea to her family first, and they were all laughing about it. Now, this is 2017. Her friends would say, oh, it's cool, but you can't, it's not a business idea. You can't make money out of that. I thought it's brilliant. I thought it's genius. And I thought it's so fitting for me, especially again, not long time ago. I'm still, you know, dealing with that traumatic response to being fired and divorced at the same time. What I decided to do this time is to get closer, and we started hanging out. We became friends. And then when I understand that we actually can be form a great business partnership together, I'm like, Hiba, let's do the smash room together.
There is a feeling that in business, a lot depends on what partners you choose and how you build the partnership. So when I came to JP, I also asked him about the partnerships they had chosen for Fortis so that they could make their payment solution so functional.
So we have two main partnerships going on at the moment, which are live, and I can talk about them. The first is obviously Network International. So they are a payment solution partner to Fortis. So that's the very first thing, which means that when Network International sends their machine, for the merchants that are interested, they can ask for Fortis to be pre-installed into those machines so that they can start immediately. And that's quite important for us as a business. So that's the first partnership. The second partnership is with Serve. Now, Serve specializes in restaurant POS, restaurant point of sale systems. The partnership that we have built with Serve has a lot of potential and is very interesting, because what we do for Serve is to simplify the checkout experience for the guests and the operations experience for the restaurant owner. So let me start with the latter. Let's say that you, Sasha, and I go to have dinner together, and we decide to split the bill. The way that it will happen is we will see a bill, and then let's say that I took a Coke and a salad, and then the waiter is going to calculate that what this amount is, and then I'm going to pay for it. And then he's going to go to you, and he's going to see, okay, she took French fries and a tuna salad and sparkling water. He's going to do the total, and you're going to pay for it. But at the end of the day, what you don't see as a customer is that that restaurant owner or the operations manager is going to have to look at every receipt that he has, and then he's going to try to match that receipt to an order. So let's say that the order is of $50. He's going to have to find three receipts and match them to that $50 order. And this means that it takes at least an hour of their day trying to match payments to orders. And this is exactly what Fortis automates and digitizes for a restaurant owner. And the way that we do that is by enabling the payment of bills by splitting a check in equal parts or by item or by dish. And this is obviously done on our SmartPOS terminal, where the waiter doesn't need to go back to his POS software in the middle of the restaurant or wherever it is. He can go directly to a table with his SmartPOS device and then select whether or not the customers want to divide the bill by equal parts or by dish, and then automatically match every payment that he receives by part or by dish to the original order. So it simplifies the life of a restaurant manager, and it simplifies the experience of the customer because there's no manual calculation that needs to be done. Everything is automated and digitized.
But let's go back to Ibrahim's story. Will his partnership with Hiba Balfaki and the second approach to business succeed? Well, let's find out.
And that's how it started. 2018, the Smashroom launched its first location in Dubai. Today, 7 years later, we have 3 fixed locations and 1 mobile location in the UAE. We're the only one operating in this country and the first one in the Middle East even to start such business. Yes, we started with a handshake, but then immediately we both knew that we have to sign some sort of paperwork between us, and that started with a co-founder agreement before even establishing the company or starting any sort of paperwork. So I knew that from my first experience. My co-founder, my partner, is mature enough to understand that this is something, yes, that we have to do. It's ticking all the right boxes. Now, the challenge is, where is the money coming from? Because we did not have enough funds to actually start a business at that scale. It's a physical space. So you need to find a place. You need to pay rent for it. You need to hire people. You need to do the fit outs. You need to do blah, 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 blah. All these things, that's a lot of money. We started pitching the idea to people we know or people we don't know. It was dead end. Nobody wants to give 2 idiots money to start a business that lets people break things in Dubai in 2017 or 18. Just nobody. Like, it's ridiculous. So eventually we pitched the idea to a family member, Hiba's family member, and to her friends. Luckily, we're blessed that they said yes. However, they pulled in the money. So it's not like one person, 5 different people pulled in that smaller amount of money, put them together. That was just enough for us to open the door on the first day. I hired people knowing that I cannot pay their salaries the first month. If I did not have customers, I don't have money to pay them. Thinking about it today and the way that I do business today, that was ridiculous. That was crazy.
That was brave. Let's say that way. Yeah, that was brave.
Yes. Yeah. Ballsy, for sure. Yes. But think about it. I had a vision. We both believed in the idea. We both believed that it would work. With that strong belief, bravery, and a little bit of stupidity too, helps sometimes to sail through such scenarios. Because on day one, we got 18 customers, and the rest is history again. We are into our 7th year. The brand is growing. A lot of people are now calling us, can I give you money? Do you want money? Banks are calling, do you want money? Do you want to borrow some money? I'm like, no, thank you so much. So yes, the beginning was very, very humble, very small. We found out, me and Hiba were driving at night around in Al Quds, the industrial area, looking at signs on warehouses that says for rent and stopping everywhere and like picking the phone, calling these numbers. And like, some of them were dodgy, some of them were not answering, some of them were like ridiculously priced, until we found the warehouse, which we actually still in since we started the original warehouse location in Al Quds. And I would say the Smashroom was one of the early creative businesses that was established in Al Quds area. Before Al Circle Avenue was really a big thing, and before a lot of other creative businesses in Dubai started. And now there is Al Quds Creative Zone, which is a government initiative to drive that, which we're so happy to see. But yeah, we were one of the early pioneers to start an unconventional business in what is it? It's an industrial area. It's a warehouse. And again, that came with challenges too, because being a warehouse, you know, the license that comes with the warehouse, it's an industrial license. You cannot, but the Smashroom is commercial. So you want to transform that piece of property, land, and the approval process that comes with that from industrial to commercial. And that on its own was a bit of a hassle. Plus, obviously, getting approval to have the trade license, the company, to operate the company. It took us just about 3 months, where today, if you want to start a business and get your trade license, you can do it in less than 1 hour. You can leave with a functioning trade license and a business today. So massive leaps in terms of the changes that have done also to the ecosystem in here to support ideas and entrepreneurs. But yeah, at that time was a little bit tough. And I remember walking from one office to another, explaining what the Smash Room is about and looking at people's faces, how they look at us. And it's like, what are these idiots talking about? And what the fuck are they doing? Are they out of their minds? I remember a guy was like, literally was like, get a life. He was like, yeah, you're nuts. Go get a life.
Okay. Heba and Ibrahim only had a month to get their first profit. Daring planning. Where did they get their first customers?
PR. So we worked with the right PR partners at that time to launch the concept because, as you rightly said, such a dramatic business idea that nobody has seen. I'm not just talking about Dubai. I'm talking about the region. Even around the world, there was like a few places similar to the Smash Room, but not at the scale that we were looking at. Not the processes and the system that we have created. So we needed the help from very, very smart marketing and PR. And what happened is that the PR agency at that time pitched the idea of the Smash Room to different media outlets through a press release to give them sort of like what they call it, a pre-look into. So before opening, media will have an exclusive, or what they call it. So media wanted an exclusive look before anyone else, specific media outlets. And I'm talking about media as big as Time Out or What's On, that kind of digital media, even Gulf News. However, the PR manager in a way was like, you know, we're not giving anybody exclusivity. It's open for anyone. Whoever comes in, covers the news and publish it, you will be the first one. So what happened is that two media were particularly keen in that, Gulf News and What's On. And they were like kind of fighting to get in the first one. Gulf News arrived first. They filmed their segment. They went back and they wrote the story for tomorrow's newspaper. What's On came and went live on Facebook. Gulf News were so mad at that. They were like calling the PR manager. And it's like, what happened? What did you do? It's like, it's technology. They went live on Facebook. And obviously such news in Dubai at that time was viral because, again, that concept was very unfamiliar.
Hey everyone, this is Ibrahim Abu Diak. Welcome to the fifth episode of this series. Today is a special day. Today I'm taking you to a place that's very close to my heart, a place that I've built from the beginning with a lot of sweat, a lot of tears, a lot of probably blood. So I'm so excited to take you here. Let's find out. If you've guessed it, you probably guessed it right. It's the Smash Room. Let's go.
Welcome to the Smash Room.
Let me tell you about the Smash Room. So it's a place where you can just come in and break things to release stress, feel better, have fun, and get that negative energy out of your system. You can hear it probably right now. You can see people are really having fun, are letting it out, and just probably having the best time of their lives. So let's talk about the 15,000 customers in just 2 years. Let's talk about more than 30,000 electronics recycled while after being smashed at the Smash Room. So it's not just fun, it's also environmentally friendly because all of these electronics, we buy them from junk and then smash them. And because of that, the Smash Room has won two awards. The first one is the best alternative wellness therapy in 2019. The second one is the most innovative wellness startup also in 2019. The Smash Room is located in Al Quds industrial area in Dubai. First you come here, you walk in, and you are welcomed by a totally different vibe from whatever you see.
That sounds like a lot of fun, but Ibrahim didn't keep his focus on just the Smash Room project for long. His creative brain had already started looking for something else.
So yeah, I wear multiple hats and I love it. I realize that I can't do one thing. It's not me. And I will be like, it would be a crime if I just do that. I can't. My ADHD cannot survive that. part of my transformation journey that started with, let's say, officially started with being fired and divorced, I started exploring who I am visually and how to, what do I do with my style? What do I wear today? How my hair should look like? I was just a standard dude with wearing the standard stuff. And it, again, nothing wrong with that if that's your thing. However, it was never me. I never felt myself. And that is where my experimentation started. And let me tell you something. I did some weird shit. Like, I tried a lot of things until I really found sort of like created what I would say Ibrahim's unique style. I dyed my hair purple, for example. I was like a unicorn walking, like, it was so funny. And then I did a mohawk hairstyle when, like, nobody loves mohawk anymore. Yeah, exploring my own style came with a lot of adventures. Some of them were not the best looking on me, but I had to do that to understand what I really like and what I don't. And for example, the things that have stayed with me is nail art. I realized that I just love expressing myself through nail art. I realized that I look at my nails as, if I don't have nail art, I feel naked. I feel my nails are just like a blank canvas and I need to fill them in with art, fill them up with art. The other part of that came is I really loved wearing colorful clothing. So whether it's really loud prints on shirts, graphics, loud graphics, lots of colors, very, very expressive. So yeah, I find myself really into streetwear specifically. I started collecting sneakers, and with collecting sneakers, one pair into another, you realize that, okay, today I have a pair that is like purple, tomorrow it's a yellow one, there's a pink one, there is a blue, and like, you know, I don't have a gray sneaker actually, and I have 100 sneakers. Like, I'm not good friends with gray and brown. Like, I don't like neutral colors. And when you have this kind of footwear that I want to wear, I'm not collecting sneakers to keep them on the shelf display. And some of them are actually really, really valuable, but I collect them to wear them. So with that, you need to wear something with it. And this is, I think, how I discovered my natural gift of styling. So, you know what? I start with the sneaker and then I build an outfit based on that. So, okay, these sneakers, what kind of pants I should wear with, or shorts, whatever, what kind of top, how do I layer things? And then how do I add accessories to complement the look? And I started feeling really that I enjoy doing that every day. You will not see me going to a supermarket wearing a pajama or slippers. I am gonna be swagged up with my earrings, with my accessories, walking to the supermarket just to buy a water or, like, you know, gummy bears. And this is basically more or less how Jokes Aside started.
Jokes Aside is Ibrahim's street fashion brand.
So the more I was showing up in Al Serkal Avenue, for example, I used to work there a lot, take my laptop and, you know, to go to a cafe, Nightjar guys, shout out to super cool people. I go there and then I meet people who would like be artists or like DJs or like, you know, someone is a painter, someone is like, or people who's just curious overall. And we end up having conversations and everybody's like, where did you get this outfit? Where did you get this shirt? Where did you get these pants? And after a few questions like these, I sat with myself and I was like, wait a minute. I want to answer once that when somebody asked me, where did you get this? I was like, I designed it. It's my brand. It's my work. Plus, the fact that now that I have established my style and my visual identity, I started to struggle to find more and more of these items that I would really love to wear and rock. And this is the major inspo behind Jokes Aside. Jokes Aside is self-expression. So it's about enabling people to be comfortable in their own skin and be comfortable wearing loud pieces, be comfortable using that style or that piece that they're wearing to start conversations, to actually help them be seen.
He made many acquaintances because complete strangers saw Ibrahim's look, recognized him as a like-minded person, and approached him to ask about his style. I think this is the magic of Arab culture. We're quite conservative in clothing, and because of that, the choice of clothing becomes such a powerful, noticeable statement. And here, I want to share with you an example from history when a ruler used the power of this statement. I'm going to tell you about Sultan al-Nasir Muhammad, who ruled Egypt in the late 13th and early 14th centuries, and he took on two important tasks for his reign. Firstly, although he himself was Mongolian origin, he actively fought the Mongols during his reign. Secondly, he reduced the tax burden on ordinary people and fought corruption. He expressed it in his appearance in a very powerful way. He began to shave his head and urged his followers to do the same. In addition, despite his Mongolian origin, he began to appear at court in the clothes of Bedouins. This shocked his court because, in general, the Sultan's dress code was usually very strictly regulated. For each occasion, there was a protocol which, among other things, regulated the clothes, their materials for the Sultan and all other participants. And also, the luxury of the Sultan's clothes was supposed to serve as a demonstration of his power and proof of the prosperity of the country. And instead of luxury and tradition, the Sultan chooses simple Bedouin clothes. Isn't that powerful? So, what did he mean by this? Firstly, the Bedouin values are community and simplicity. This was the way Sultan al-Nasir Muhammad showed that he supported the common people and that he would not allow officials to impose excessive taxes on them and profit from corruption. And at the same time, by rejecting Mongolian traditions and clothing, he showed his military determination. It is precisely because of strong traditions and clothing that deviation from tradition has such power. Similarly, when an artist or musician puts on clothes from the Joke Society brand, it is impossible not to notice them, not to see that they share values of their community.
And I have an artist that bought a t-shirt, I remember. She is Canadian, but she lives between Canada and Dubai, and she bought a purple t-shirt, one of our early editions that was sold out. And she took it to Canada, and she was wearing it in one of the streets. And she sent me, this is her words, she sent me a message saying, I'm very grateful, thank you so much, because your products helped me be seen as an artist. So people would stop her or like say, hey, compliment her t-shirt. And it's like, okay. And that gives you an opportunity to tell them about what you do. Hey, you know what? I'm a musician. I make music. Check it out on Spotify or whatever it is. So with jokes aside, I came in better equipped than my first startup with the automotive and then the Smash Room. Now I have years of experience, but that doesn't mean that it's all easy. Remember, again, it's a whole new industry. I did not study fashion design. It's self-funded until today, 100% self-funded. It's a very, very expensive industry to be self-funding, which I learned to realize a bit later down the line. It's also very slow, being a slow fashion brand. We are not a fast fashion brand. All our practices are very sustainable. Everything that we use is done locally. I buy the fabrics from the local market. We manufacture here in Dubai, very small numbers, using all local resources, local artists, local talent. I'm talking about UAE-based talent from different nationalities around the world. This means that the start was really tough because I did not really know where to start. I needed to figure out a lot of things. Find out a manufacturer, find out a fabric supplier, somebody to sample, an actual designer to do the technical drawings. I cannot do that. And then a lot of other things, because the process is very, very long. Like today we talk about a collection from concept development into, you know, sketches to sampling to production to being ready to go to market, we're talking about a cycle of at least 6 months. So it's a very, very slow process. And what I've learned is that what I did, for example, when it comes to fabric, I found the only fabric manufacturer / supplier in Dubai that is sustainable. They do, all their practices are sustainable in terms of manufacturing, in terms of supplying, all these kind of stuff. Plus, it's a local business. So it aligns with the vision of, you know, supporting local brands as well. The brand is less than 2 years old. still baby in my eyes. Baby that is growing fast, though. Growing fast, gaining a lot of recognition, a lot of great feedback. Fashion PR is another word. I would say, in a way or another, and you can even quote me on that, it's fucked up. In a way that, you know, it's not, because I looked at fashion PR and how the tradition is being done, and most brands, what they would do, they have products, they organize special events, mostly parties, free drinks for everyone, and they invite the socialites or influencers to that event, hoping that they will give them freebies and they will post stuff and blah, blah, blah. I hate that. We don't do that, and we don't need an agency to do that. You end up seeing the same faces all over again. To me, it's against who we stand for. We stand for individuality, for expression. What is the point of having one person talking about five different brands that are more or less in the same field? You know, and today you support H&M, tomorrow you want to support Joke Society. No, thank you. So yes, I'm being honest and blunt about it because I understand it's also not for everyone. I understand that this is something that we will attract our tribe, and we are, and our tribe get attracted to us and they join. And then hopefully the more and more, you know, you're out there, the more people will see that and will align with it. However, for Joke Society, the launch was at an actual event. So I pitched Joke Society to an event organizer. I remember being on the phone with him for 45 minutes. We never met before. I only had slides, a deck. That's it. I did not even have samples. But I had the visual identity, the mission already in place. And I want to take a pop-up within a big event that was planning to start. That event was the first Bred by Hypebeast event in Abu Dhabi in 2023, last year. So successfully managed to convince this person, which I'm really grateful that he gave us that opportunity. And I'm sure that he's proud of what we have done with that opportunity. So we got a 3x3, if not, I think smaller, 3x2 pop-up to start with. I planned to launch the first capsule in that pop-up. I did not want a rail with hangers and clothes put in there. Just that. I want an experience. I wanted an experience. I wanted people to engage with the brand and, like, you know, everybody to have that. So, okay, what the hell is going on here? Who is this brand? What is this guy's doing? So I remember I was with three part-timers. That was my team at that point, and the most unpaid creative director in this city. We came up with this concept. I found a bathtub of Dubizzo. You know, Dubizzo is a classified website or app. I went, I had a truck at that time. I picked it up from the guy's place at the back of my truck. I drove to the smash room parking outside in the warehouse. I put it down, took some spray paint with a couple of my team, and we were spraying that bathtub into all kind of colors. Yeah, the bathtub was gold ugly, like really, really ugly shade of gold. And we turned it into an art masterpiece. Very amateur art, but it was very expressive to what I wanted to do. So my idea was that I filled that bathtub with those soft balls. I brought some of these bubble guns, and we got one of these LED mirrors, like huge mirrors that change lights, and you know, you can control the light with it. We got a hand tufted rug with the astronaut and the mushroom hat and, you know, the brand's logo. I was splattering paint on the floor, on the ceiling. We had no contractor. We had no design. I knew the concept. I drew it on a piece of paper, and this is what we worked with. So I remember everybody has got their contractors with their yellow vests and stuff. And I'm like, you know, we're just wearing our normal clothes and like there in the middle of all that chaos when people were actually trying to get their boots ready. And talking about big companies like ASICS or New Balance or bigger brands and clothing brands. And there is this local company that a couple of guys and girls are like, you know, painting and splattering paint on the doors. And like, we I remember even having a security person coming. It's like, you're not allowed to spray paint on the door outside. I'm like, this is our booth. We're going to do whatever we want to do with it. I also remember that we had a huge fuck up with the production, because until day one of the event, the event started around like 5 p.m. or so. We had no products. The factory just fucked this up. I mean, like, they were supposed to give us the products days before, and there was delays, and we could not get anything from this. So what happened is that, you know, constant calling and panics and all of that stuff. And one of my team took a car, drove from Abu Dhabi to Dubai to the factory to take whatever was ready in a box and bring it to the event. We didn't have like barcodes, we'd have no POS system, none of that was there. And we sold on the first day, we sold a few t-shirts. And what happened is that every day a person would go to Dubai, pick up another batch from the factory and bring it to the, until, like, you know, we had a decent amount of stock. But on the last day, we got sold out. Our now best-selling t-shirts, the print t-shirts and also the sublimation print shirts, were all gone. We had like odd sizes, like one or two pieces. And like, we had people saying, oh, I waited until the last day. I wanted to get that purple tee that you had, or the pink tee, or the green one. And you don't have it anymore. And mind you, we sold t-shirts for almost $100 at that time. But people saw the value. And even like the finishing, the quality, not just of the artwork, the material quality, the fabric quality, the finishing quality. Yeah, the factory screwed us up with the delay, but the finishing was really great. So at least I have to say, what, you know, I still work with the same factory. However, that turned into one of the greatest relationships with them, to be honest. I still struggle with reliability in terms of like delays and all that stuff. But I've learned to work around it and to work with it, you know, because I couldn't find another factory in the country that would deliver the same quality. We switched the t-shirts to a lighter fabric, the one that I'm wearing today. It's a much lighter fabric that you'll be comfortable in Dubai summer. I mean, there's no fabric that makes you comfortable in Dubai summer.
Very bold, like, very bold statement.
Yeah, but it's not gonna make you sweat as much as a thicker fabric. If I look at Juxtasite today compared to last year, this massive leap in terms of systems and processes. Today, we have, for starters, we have barcodes, we have system, we have a POS system, we have our online store is functioning. We are also in 3 or 4 different retail stores in the city, which we never had presence before. We participate in bigger events. We designed one t-shirt for 25 Hours Hotel, which got sold out as well. So all of that, I realized that I cannot do on my own. So what I did is I brought a person who his whole experience was in retail. And I appointed him as a brand manager. Muhammad, if you see this, I'm very grateful to you, to what you have done so far, because it helped change a lot of things. There is so much you can do as one person, no matter how talented or dedicated you are. There's this much that you can do. And this is when you start, you know, delegating and like giving the work to the person who knows it better than you, then that's when you, the business will start growing. So Muhammad is taking that brand to the next level. He's ex-Shalhoub, ex-That Concept Store, Level Shoes, all that experience that he comes with is very, very beneficial. And also with that, I'm building the rest of the structure. So I'm getting a dedicated marketing person, accounting, a stockroom personnel to deal with the stock, you know, and a whole bunch of freelancers that also support the brand, illustrators, artists, and obviously the community. The Juxtasite community is also growing. I still feel that there is so much more to do with Juxtasite. We're only scratching the surface. I'm not satisfied yet. It's not yet worth it financially in a way that, yes, the business generates revenue, that there's customers, we have sales, we have a proven record. But it's not big enough yet to say, okay, this is a business that I would use to, you know, it's still a business that I still invest in. So I'm still like feeding the business in rather than taking money out of it. And mind you, I still, like on the books, I know I've learned this again. I've dedicated a salary to myself, but that was never paid yet. So I've never taken a dime out of the business, but I see the potential. whether it's in terms of the size, whether it's in terms of financials, in terms of scaling. I told you about the vision, the dream. I understand that the process is different from the Smashroom. As I said before, fashion, as like the life cycle of brands is much longer in terms of like, when does it start to make sense?
The reason I wanted to share this story with you is because I personally find it very inspiring. I like how Ibrahim dives straight into practice without thinking too long, without calculating all the moves. Just as he looks for his own style, trying different things, even obviously too radical ones, he does the same thing in business. Don't get me wrong. Of course, I understand. We all understand. You can't open a business if you don't have a safety net to pay your employees for the next month. But it turns out that sometimes you can. I understand that you can draw a design yourself on paper and open a store if you haven't received the delivery from the production yet. But what if sometimes you can? Sometimes business is about courage, and the picture of entrepreneurship without such courage would be incomplete. So if you're now thinking that you lack something, education, investments, maybe this can be made up for by simply courage. You're listening to Crossing the Desert, podcast by Fortis. Fortis helps seamlessly connect businesses and their customers and run the business. It assists in attracting and retaining customers, selling products and services, accepting payments both online and in-store, and managing finances and personnel. Join Fortis social media. Links are in the episode description. Follow our podcast or add it to your favorites. Give us 5 stars or a heart and leave us a comment. This will help other listeners find out about us, and we'll love to read and answer them. See you in the next episode. Production by Hatchup Podcast Studio. Showrunners and editors Alexandra Volkova and Yelena Volkova. Producer Daria Sanikova. History consultant Alena Podnebenna. Sound designer Ksenia Kazantseva. And I'm your host, Isaac Delonin.